Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Some people spend their lives trying to capture the perfect moment. Allison Conklin learned just how precious a moment is. At 13, she was diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Months later, she lost her mother to the same disease. And nearly three decades later, at 42, the same age her mother was when she died, Allison was told her own heart was failing and that without a transplant, she had roughly 6 months to live. Then, on October 18th, 2022, everything changed. A donor heart gave Allison something extraordinary, more time. Today, she is a photographer, storyteller, wife, mother, heart transplant recipient, and the founder of Bonus Days, a magazine built around the belief that even after the unimaginable, there can still be a beautiful life waiting for us. Allison, welcome to Trailblazers.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I know we were talking a little bit about before we started, but, you know, writing for this particular podcast, preparing for it, doing the research, I was in tears. I was absolutely in tears. So I want to dive in. I want to talk to you about Allison before the patient, right? So before we talk about the heart disease and transplantation and the photography and or Bonus Days, which I'm excited to get to, who was the girl growing up in your family and what did you imagine your life would look like before you were Allison the patient? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Such a good question. I mean, I think to understand me, you need to know I'm an only child. My mom had four miscarriages before the birth of myself and then one after me. Both of my parents were insanely intelligent. Both were organic chemists. Mm. My dad had gone on to have so many patents and, you know, invent so many things.
Wow.
And I was this like wild child of art and creativity and had no business doing math or science, right? So like I was the opposite of what they were in terms of, you know, the analytical, the brain that they had. I was also, I was born with a hearing loss. So I had about 60 to 65% gone in each ear, had hearing aids since basically toddlerhood. And so the world was really quiet. Mm. So I became a watcher of things because I couldn't hear anything. Mm-hmm. So I would just watch body language. When I didn't feel like I could fit in, I would mimic whatever, you know, if they were laughing, I was laughing, you know, like I would mimic that. I would learn how to lip read, which is something that has carried me through my whole life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I mean, I was in sports. I was on the all-star team in basketball.
Yeah. Did you think you were going to be a basketball player?
No, I never aspired to that. I certainly was not coordinated enough. I was excited to be on the all-star team, but I think that had more to do with the fact I was one of the only 5'9", you know,
yeah,
sixth graders,
yeah,
at the time. But I, you know, I had no idea really what I wanted to do. I was always drawing and I always loved art. So I think, you know, I always leaned towards that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, reconnecting with that version of myself is so hard and so funny because it's been so much since those moments. But I think truly if I would have, you know, it would have been like an art teacher.
I think that's what my 7-year-old Grace probably wants to aspire to become because she's like a wild child and
yep,
she is just totally into art.
Yeah.
So at just 13, you were diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, mm-hmm, the same disease that your mother actually had. What did a 13-year-old understand about that? You know, I mean, that's a pretty big diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you understand about that moment now that you couldn't possibly have understood then? First of all, what is cardiomyopathy? Can you share that?
Yeah, of course. So if you imagine, maybe you're listening to this in your car, maybe you're in your a space with walls.
Mm-hmm.
If you imagine you are in the room that you are in and the space that you are in and you start to build bricks around every wall or, you know, bricks within that car and everything that's in that car is going to stay in that car. Everything in that room is going to stay in that room. And there's going to be no room for anything to move. That is hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
Mm.
It is too thick. If you think about the heart being in four chambers, the septum of my heart was like 4 or 5 times larger than the normal septum of a healthy person. And there was no room for blood. And so what was happening to me, the reason what brought me to the cardiologist when I was diagnosed was that I had passed out in the middle of a very competitive game of floor hockey in gym class. And, you know, after a few tests, the doctor was like, hey, you know, kid, you got a heart just like your mom's. And I remember my mom and I sitting in there silently. And as a kid remembering it, I remember her being really quiet. And I never understood that. And then when I had my own kids, you know, and you reach this certain age, you're like, man, I don't know what I would have said either. Mm. You know, if my kids had been diagnosed with something I genetically passed to them. You know, and if I look back at like that, what I understood at that point, I mean, I remember they slapped me with a Holter monitor. And at that point in the 90s, it was really big and oversized. And it like included a huge fanny pack and was really heavy. And I had to go to like youth group like that, high school or, you know, school like that. And I just remember, trying to be like ripping my closet apart, thinking, well, let me find the biggest sweater. Like, I didn't want anyone to know. Mm. I didn't want anyone to know that I was, you
13.
Know,
13. It's a tough age.
Right.
Because myself, yeah.
Right. Everyone else is, you know, worried about relationships and homework and, you know, those kinds of things. And I was suddenly like, I was still very much processing what in the world had just happened to me. And so I just, you know, I can remember not telling anybody. And I think that was very true to who I was. I mean, if you didn't know I had a heart disease, I wasn't going to tell you. Mm-hmm. It was something that I hid. Mm. And in understanding it now, it's certainly just a whole different gamut of all these thoughts and information and really confusing and conflicting emotions. But I don't know, I'm here to tell the story about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to talk a little bit about your mom because just, you know, only months later, right. Your mother died from that same disease. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, you weren't simply grieving your mother, you were living with the illness that had taken her. How did these two realities become intertwined for you?
Yeah. You know, I couldn't really separate missing my mom and fearing that I would become her. So I think, you know, I lost her in the kitchen of my childhood home randomly one morning. It was my first day at my first job as a page at the library, at the Emmaus Library, shout out. And we were talking about one thing, and then the next minute she passed out, and I had tried to give her, I'd given her CPR, and I had called 911, and my dad at work, and, you know, begged her to wake up. And there was just this, like, unknown, like, I had no idea what, I was in shock. I think when I look back at that, because I remember walking back into the house after we had come back, you know, from the ambulance trip and everything, and we're obviously a family of two at this point. And I remember my dad closing that door and just falling against the door and just crying. And like, my dad was a very stoic man. He was not an emotional guy because he was, again, very science, math oriented. So emotion was never a thing. He would never be like, Allison, how are you feeling about having HCM, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy? You know, that was never a conversation. It was sort of like, just get through it. And so seeing this man, this, like, you know, fall against the ground, I just stood there. I had no idea what to do. And, you know, I just think that at that moment, I was just diagnosed with what just killed her. I just watched her, like, literally watched her die. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, she was 42, and I guess I will be 42 when I die. And, you know, that thinking, you know, I used to go to sleep every night thinking about everything that could go wrong in my next day, which is probably a whole diagnosis in itself. But I was like, if I can think about it, I won't be blindsided. Mm. You know, I don't know if you've ever, like if you imagine everything that could go wrong. And that was very much like years of my life trying to just like, if I thought about it, it's not going to happen, right? Because I didn't think I was going to wake up that morning and lose her in the way that we did. You know, and so I know fear isn't always intellectual, but it just becomes part of your body. And I think there was so much fear within me that I was going to become my mom.
Well, and you had a constant reminder. So it wasn't, you know, you didn't just have the grief on top of it. You had a daily apparatus that you had to strap to yourself. And, you know, in towards the end of the interview, we'll talk a little bit about the heart transplant and the sound of your heart while you had this disease, mm-hmm. you know, like how it was loud, right? And then, so that's like a constant reminder. How did you navigate that as a 13-year-old kid in middle school? You know, I mean, wow.
Yeah, I'm...
I guess you don't know how strong you have to be until, you know, strength is the only choice you have. But man.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. I mean, you know, there was only a few choices, right? So my dad luckily taught me photography. Mm-hmm. Because when my mom died, this is the 90s, so this is before social media and digital photography. So they were hobbyist photographers, and he handed me a box of all these pictures that they had taken. And I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with it because I could see how my mom smiled. I could mm-hmm. see how she looked at me, right? Because when you lose somebody, you lose that connection, and you hope it existed, and so having a tangible thing that I could hold in my hand and see these photos of her became my most prized possession. So I started photography, and so a lot of my healing and moving forward through grief was me working in the darkroom that my dad built me. And
what a beautiful gift.
It truly was. Yeah, I wouldn't leave him alone. So suddenly he was a single dad of a teenager, right? A teenage daughter. And so I begged him, and so he built me this dark room in our basement, and I spent most of my high school years down there.
So that's where you as a photographer was born, not right. simply from wanting to make beautiful pictures, but from discovering that photographs can keep people, moments, and stories with us after they're gone. How important is that to you now as you go into, you know, all these new projects and, you know, capturing everybody's moments and, you know, making an impact? How important is that to you? Is that a gift to your mom? Is it a gift back to your dad? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I knew how important photography was in the grief of my mom. And, you know, I have always understood that on a level. And so I, you know, when I started shooting weddings, right, at 18, mm-hmm. A lot of those people that I was photographing their weddings had no idea of loss. Maybe they hadn't experienced anything like that, but I knew, right? And so it was a gift to them. And then it became a gift to my children. Like, I was going to document them because I didn't know how long I was going to have with them. Mm-hmm. And just continuing that, it's sort of like my answer to, hey, I've been through this really terrible experience and this thing helped me, so I want to help you. Mm-hmm. I think in every aspect of grief and loss and, you know, terribleness of things, you eventually reach the stage of healing where you're like, let me take what I have experienced and turn that into something that could help someone else. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's photography. And, you know, it's because it shows you who somebody is and the experience and the relationship that existed. And it's all in those little moments of like how someone looks at someone, and there's just no better grip than that.
What do you think it taught you about people and about noticing the moments the rest of us often miss? You know, I'm actually one that I get so caught up in the moment that I forget to take the picture.
Yeah.
And then when somebody's like, oh, let's take a picture, let's do a selfie, I'm like, oh, whatever, you know. But I'm all like, you know, first day of school, I'm there. But, yeah. You know, like there's a whole lot of impact in photography. What do you think, what has it taught you about people? And you know, what do you want other people to know about how important capturing those moments are?
Yeah, I mean, I'm now almost 30 years in, yeah. as a professional photographer. You
know, that doesn't seem, wow.
I know, it seems
insane.
You don't
seem old enough.
I know, my husband's like, stop telling people that. They're going to think you're really old.
And you, I mean, let's give you proper props here, right? Martha Stewart Weddings, Brides, The Knot, Better Homes and Gardens. I mean, you've been featured in some of the most prestigious publications. That's exciting.
It is.
But yeah, what has that taught you? Because a lot of people, you know, they'll have somebody there for events, but they don't necessarily capture the day to day.
Right. I mean, I think it at the end of the day, everybody wants to be seen, mm-hmm. because everybody has a story, and it's beautiful and it's important, and sometimes it's tragic, and you know, you've survived things, and I think really truly everybody wants to be seen. My job is really not to make someone perform for me. I never want to have people look back and be like, oh, do you remember like posing for hours, or do you remember feeling so uncomfortable? Like, it's taught me a lot of how to walk into a room and not know anybody there and suddenly have to make everyone feel comfortable that I'm there, standing there with the camera, mm-hmm. right? There's something in between you and I. It's this camera. And it's just, it's taught me that, like, people sometimes get so caught up and they sometimes miss the plot and miss the little things that share how much is happening and how much, you know, love there is between people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's such a gift for me to be able to capture that in somebody's life, you know, whatever moment that is to say, like, I want you to see how, you know, your dad was looking at you while you were getting married, or I want you to see how beautiful you are. We always, I think, look at ourselves and think, oh, if I could just, you know, XYZ, fill in the blank of any of your insecurities. It's like, you're beautiful just as you are right now, because the fact you could open your eyes and get out of bed is a miracle to itself. Mm-hmm. And that is enough. And I think, you know, that is the breath that I try to take into any time I pick up the camera.
Yeah, absolutely. So you lived with this disease for nearly 3 decades and even underwent open heart surgery in 2018. Mm-hmm. When did you realize that managing your condition was no longer going to be enough and that you were actually going to need a new heart? Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about that, because that must have been like, oh boy, right. You know, an oh boy moment.
Right. I mean, I had, so in, my mom died in 1994. That's when I was diagnosed. In 2000, they gave me an ICD, which is an implanted mm-hmm. internal defibrillator, which is something that was newer to the market. And they told me, like, hey, if your mom would have had this, it might have saved her life. From that moment, my life became very much, you know, new medications, side effects of medications, ICDs, new batteries. I mean, that ICD went on to save my life. I took my son to go get his braces on, and I dropped dead. Right there in front of him. So that same story that happened to my mom and I happened to my younger son and I.
Oh, my word.
You know, and I was brought back because my device shocked me back.
Wow.
And I was in my 30s at that point. So, you know, and then and that led to, I had 2 brain tumors. And so I had emergency brain surgery a few times, and as one does.
Wow.
And then I, you know, that caused a domino effect of needing a total hysterectomy. And, then, you know, more ICD stuff than I had open heart and all of this stuff. And so, like, it happened all at once and slowly. And my life became a lot of, go on ahead of me, I'll be fine. I just need a minute to catch my breath. Or, you know what, I'm not feeling up to it. I'm going to stay here. You know, like, tying my shoe was hard. Putting on a bed sheet was an Olympic sport. I couldn't walk from Wegmans from my car to Wegmans. It was like I had to stop and catch my breath. And I did not realize it, how bad it had gotten. And I think in 2022, you know, when I went to that cardiologist appointment, he was like, you've got 6 months. And I remember that moment just staring at him like, no, there's no way. You know, like, not realizing how bad it was, like, because it had happened all at once and slowly at the same time. And in my head, that picture of, like, complete heart failure looked a lot like the movies, right? But clearly it wasn't. And mm-hmm. so I had maxed out of all of the end-stage heart failure drugs that were available. They told me in July that I needed a heart. My husband and I took a trip. I don't know, a month later, I was passing out in the middle of the street. Like, I got so sick, and by October, I had to wait in the hospital. You know, I never really thought it was going to happen for me. I never even understood what transplant was. It wasn't like it was part of my thought process, mm-hmm. right? It was never an option for my mom. I never really experienced it. And, you know, I was 42 at the time that they told me I was going to die. And so, of course, then it was like self-reflection. Wait, did I manifest this? You know, but I don't even... You just kind of go through the motions, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned your mom died at 42. And you've talked about how that number followed you for years. And then at 42 yourself, you faced that. Mm-hmm. What happened inside you when the fear you had, carried since childhood suddenly seemed to be coming true? And how did you muster the gumption to overcome it and say, I'm going to fight this? Mm-hmm. I mean, because, and Allison, I want you to lean into this, because there may be a listener out there that maybe is avoiding the call or not making the appointment or whatever, had you not had the opportunity, mm-hmm. it might have ended differently.
100%.
Talk to me about how you mustered the gumption, why you did it, how you did it.
Yeah.
Go there for me.
Right. I mean, well, I mean, you should know I'm a human being. So I was angry.
Yeah.
And I was terrified. And once I kind of like sat in that for a day or two, I knew that I've never been afraid of death. I'm afraid of leaving my kids too soon.
Mm-hmm.
My mom never saw me graduate from high school. Mm-hmm. She never saw me get married. She never saw me have kids. She never, you know, saw anything I did. I didn't want to do that to my family. You know, sitting at both of my son, like when I made it, this is obviously before transplant, when I made it to both of my kids' high school graduations, it was such a big deal to me because my mom was not at those moments. And so I was like, I did it. Like all of these things, everything that had led to them, you know, graduating, which was like 2021 and 2022, there was so much pain, right? It was so hard to, there was a year where I had 5 major surgeries, open heart, 2 brain surgeries, another ICD, a hysterectomy, all within a matter of less than 12 months. And it was literally the worst year of my life because I'm still shooting weddings. I'm still working just as hard as always. But so sitting in those moments, I was like, I did it. And that is what drives me, right? Like, I love my husband more than anything in the world. I love my kids. I'm crazy about them. And I just want to be there for them so that they can call me on some random Tuesday and say, like, they're excited about something or they're terrified. Just because I would give anything to have a minute with my mom, one more minute. And I know I'm not going to be here forever, but I want to be here as long as I can to show them that, like, I'm trying and I want to be and you're worth it and I love you. And I think, you know, that's what really is my driving force is them, the 3 of them. Yeah.
I can't even see through my tears, Allison. How do I get to the next question? I don't even know. So waiting for a transplant is such a complicated kind of hope, right? Because the call that may save your life also means another family has experienced a tremendous loss. How did you emotionally reconcile desperately wanting that call with knowing what it meant? You know, I think this is something a lot of people don't talk about.
Right. No, and thank you for that question because it is a big one. I remember when they first mentioned transplant, I was like, how can I hope that I get one? Because I know what that means. And then you know, I continue to work through that and it becomes like I can be profoundly grateful without calling another family's, you know, worst day a blessing. Mm. And I can also understand that like their death had nothing to do with me and that in their death, they decided to say yes, you know, to organ donation and to save someone else's life. Like, and through my work with Bonus Days, I've talked to a lot of deceased family donor, you know, families, and they have shared that they were shocked to know that transplant recipients have like guilt, right? Survivor's guilt, because they know what it cost for them to be here. And they're like, because them living their best life gives them a little bit knowledge of like their loved one's heart is still beating and allowing someone else. So like, I think it's really coming to the idea of they didn't die because of me. That tragedy would have happened if I was listed for a transplant or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also knowing, you know, anytime my anniversary comes around, it is certainly that knowledge of like, I'm really glad I'm here, but I know that someone else is missing someone.
And I want to remind listeners, you know, a family friend of mine lost their son last year, actually. It was quite unexpected. It was a bee sting. and he didn't make it, but he was an organ donor. He was also a firefighter. And his heart went to somebody else and it lives on in somebody else. And I spoke to his mother after that, and it really is a beautiful gift. And I, you know, if anybody's ever considering, should I put organ donor on my license, or, you know, if they are a transplant recipient and they're dealing with the gravity that can sometimes hold, you know, I wanted to make sure that I brought up here that, you know, your story, but also the beautiful gift that his family acknowledged it to be and how his heart lives on. So, yeah. Okay, let's get to the next level. Tell me a little bit about bonus days, how you decided to come up with that concept, you know, the print magazine, just all of that. You know, like what is it that that made you decide, okay, we're going to take photography to the next level and we're going to create this incredible project?
Yeah. Regrouping here. I mean, the idea for the magazine didn't come from believing that my story, like me personally, needed a larger platform. Mm-hmm. You know, it came from realizing that my story was only one small part of something much greater and a much bigger community. And, you know, when I was told that I needed a transplant, like within those months between receiving it, I was looking for stories because I was like, how am I going to live? What's my life going to look like? Because I didn't know anybody with a transplant. And I couldn't find anything because all of the media stories were the trauma that got somebody to transplant, them receiving it, and then the story ends. And I was like, well, okay, maybe. But like, what happens next? Like, right. You know what I mean? Like, what does that mean? And so I knew what was missing. And I really wanted to, you know, try to amplify and make it a little bit easier. I mean, I know how hard all of this has been for me. And if I could make the world of transplant just a little bit easier for people that were, you know, coming in after me or, you know, and or walking alongside of me, I wanted to do it, kind of like leaving a light on for people.
Yeah.
And so I had this nutso idea of starting a print magazine in 2024.
Wow. So what's the distribution? Who does it go to? What's its premise? Talk to me a little bit about that. If somebody wanted to pick up a copy,
yeah.
Or who knows, maybe, you know, have their story featured in it. 100%. How does that, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's Bonus Days, Pages for the Resilient. It's for transplant recipients, caregivers, deceased donor families, living donors, people that are working healthcare-wise. I mean, truly for anybody who wants to read something that's miraculous. It is stories that aren't going to be toxic positive. They are going to share the ups and downs. A lot of transplant is two steps forward and five steps back. Mm-hmm. A very good friend of mine calls it whack-a-mole. Like mm-hmm. you kind of control one thing and 17 other things pop up. But it's allowing a space for our stories to be shared. And, you know, no matter what organ it is, we all have the same fears and anxieties and celebrations. And so I want people to be able to look at a magazine and see themselves mirrored back, you know, and they, whether they see scars that look like theirs or stories that sound like theirs, all of that. And right now it's in six major centers, actually seven as of yesterday, like Yale, Penn, NYU, Temple, University of Washington, UT Southwestern. Mm-hmm. And people can buy it from the website as well. So it's in patients' hands. And it's slowly getting to all the centers.
Mm, yeah. That's exciting.
It is.
So with just a couple minutes left in the program, if that, what has your new heart taught you about how you should use the time that we're given?
I mean, I think transplant has taught me so much with the time. And I think that if I would have not had the experience of, you know, my entire life, maybe I would have waited until I had the funding to start a print magazine. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would have waited to make the call. Maybe I would have, you know, not followed through on something. But I think I look at my life like this is borrowed time. Mm-hmm. The whole time, right? Like I've been kept alive through science and, you know, new research and, you know, ICDs being available, right? I would have been dead in my 30s. All of these things have kept me alive. And so I just feel like if you want to do something, go for it. What are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. There's like literally no reason to wait. I did not have funding. I decided to start a print magazine out of my own savings and do it. And it's reaching people and it's helping people. And I also realized that if I can only do seven issues, it's never a failure because first of all, I tried. I know that it helped people, and I know that people are reading it. And you never know the impact you're going to make. And so I think knowing if you have a story to share, go share it. If you have a dream in your heart, go do it. What are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. You know, like there's no wrong answer to following your dream. I mean, life is messy and wild. And I just say go for it. And that's sort of the life that I just do. I'm kind of crazy that way.
That's incredible advice. Allison, your story began with a heart you inherited, carries the memory of a mother you lost, and continues today because of a heart someone else chose to give you. Somewhere between those chapters, you found your life's work, helping people see what is worth holding on to. Maybe that's what a photographer understands better than most. We don't get to keep a moment forever. We simply get the chance to recognize it while it's here. And perhaps that's the invitation behind bonus days. Don't wait for life to become fragile before realizing how extraordinary and ordinary can be. Allison, thank you for sharing your heart and your bonus days with us. And thank you for joining me on Trailblazers.